Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah. We're getting ready for the holidays here at Restaurant Guys Radio.
It's the most wonderful time.
And I see that
of the year.
There are lots of new gizmos and gadgets. There's a little article in the Times this week.
You know, every year I do a lot of I get hundreds of pounds of catalogs at home because I do a lot of internet shopping. And the one year I did a lot of my Christmas shopping on the internet, which really saved me a lot of time, and I got a lot of great gifts. But the next year, I got, literally, there are 5 pounds of catalogs every day. And I live in Jersey City. I have one of those little urban mailboxes. Mm-hmm. It's just thrown on the floor. Everything's thrown on the floor.
One of the things I've done at the restaurant in order to keep the restaurant on budget is I just don't let Francis see any of the catalogs. I just toss them.
Well, you know, it's funny because the mail order stuff, I mean, we sell gifts, and that's a huge portion of our business has become people buying gift certificates for either for the wine course coming up in January or for one of the two restaurants. And I love the gift certificate idea. But, you know, when we get these catalogs, I'm always struck by the gifts I don't want.
Yes.
You know, they're like, oh, that's stupid.
There are so many. Every year, you know, there's going to be the s'mores maker. And you're going to be like, you know, I don't need a s'mores maker. Just melt some chocolate and put a marshmallow on it. It's s'more.
You know, my favorite was last year they had it was like one of those catalogs. I don't know which one it is, so I can't mention it or I'm going to get sued. But it was one of those fancy catalogs that are from, and they had the French hot chocolate maker.
Sounds delicious.
So, and it's a ceramic pot.
Yes, it's
on
ceramic.
On top of, and it comes with a couple of ceramic cups, and you put chocolate in there and milk.
Yes.
You put it in the microwave.
And you melt the chocolate.
Yeah.
And then?
That's a hot chocolate maker.
Ah, ha, ha, it's perfect.
It's a pot.
Works every time.
And I was the hot chocolate maker, and I was like, it's a pot. And you know what? Any pot. You put chocolate milk in there, and you make it hot, even if it doesn't say Le France, Le Chocolatier Français, it still makes hot chocolate.
I will tell you that my French grandmother always used to melt chocolate for my hot chocolate. No powdery mixes for us.
Nah, see, there's a difference. I like hot chocolate, and I also like hot cocoa.
Mm-hmm.
Hot cocoa is very different. I enjoy the hot cocoa. You got to make the paste first.
Chocolatey mixes
All right,
for us.
We're boring the listeners, so let's move on. There are a series of new gizmos and gadgets coming out for Christmas this year that if you have too much money and you would like to get rid of some of it, you can spend on some useless. The Ferran Adria, who is the most famous chef in the world, has all this crazy modern avant-garde cuisine, has come up with the Faces of Ferran Adria collection, which, to be fair to Ferran Adria, he means it to be fun and funny. But One of the things he's come up with is the spoon with the clothespin attachment.
Yeah, I don't need this. This is on my list of please don't buy me this for Christmas this year.
In the Faces of Ferran Adria collection, you can have this spoon, and it has a
little clothespin attachment.
Clippy clip that you can clip some herbs to that go under your nose while you're eating the food.
So you can smell like basil while you're eating a spoonful of tomatoes.
Stop it.
Please, I'm begging you to
just
stop it.
Here's my favorite one. And Adria, I think, is a very important chef. Maybe the most important chef in the world. But if you're ready for a traditional-looking spoon that's been cast in gold and bored with holes, that's right, holes in the spoon, while it may look like the anti-soup spoon, to Adria's eyes lights up as he describes it. This is great for cereal because I really want my cereal crispy without the milk. Hold on a second.
Then don't put the milk on it.
Let me review. No, but he wants it in the milk, but then he wants the cereal to be taken out of the milk. It's a
slotted spoon.
You've invented the slotted spoon. Congratulations. Just a small one. And secondly, Okay, hold on a second. I got my bowl of cereal, right? I want to eat the cereal. I want to lift it up out of the milk and eat the cereal. Can you think of any utensil that you could use?
A fork.
A fork! You've invented the fork! Congratulations!
Now, you know what he's invented?
What?
He's invented another way for me to get spots on my tie.
You know what he's invented? I don't care what he's invented. You know what he's making? Money.
And a lot of it.
He's making
money. So anyway, this little list from the Times started me to thinking about things that I don't want to get for Christmas this year. So I began a small list of things that I don't want to get for Christmas. And I'm going to ask all of our listeners to email me anything that you have that you don't want to get for Christmas.
Send
Mark at restaurantguysradio.com.
Mark with a K. Mark with a K at restaurantguysradio.com.
And please send that in to me, anything that you don't want to get for
Christmas.
That's
food related.
Yeah, of course. And I'm going to give you some things. This year it seems to be ubiquitous, like the s'mores maker last year, is the chocolate fountain. Okay, Francis and I have tasted the chocolate that can be turned into a chocolate fountain, and it tastes yucky.
Chocolatey fountain.
So please don't get me a chocolate fountain. I'm
or
begging
while you're
you,
at
please.
It. A whiskey sour fountain, either. We don't need that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take my whiskey sour in a glass. I'll take my chocolate on a plate.
So, on my list of things that you shouldn't think of me on my don't buy me list this year, of course, are McDonald's coupons. I'm going to ask you not to get me any coupons to McDonald's this year.
But if you want to give them just a little packet of trans fats, you can just hand that to them. We can shortcut the whole thing, and we'll just sprinkle that on the rest of your food.
There's another thing that I won't be needing this year, and that is something we've talked about on the show before. And that is the Crustastun.
Crustastun is the humane lobster killer.
I am instead of electrocuting my lobster, I'm going to continue to use my knife to kill my lobsters before I put them in the pot.
You barbarian.
So if you would please not get me the little $4,000 electrocution system for our lobsters.
So you can humanely kill your lobsters.
So I can humanely kill my lobsters instead of doing it in 1 second with a knife. I ask that you leave the Crustastun off my list.
Anything else
year.
You would not like to see in your stocking?
I'm going to ask that you leave, and I hate to pick on him again, but that you leave David Burke's flavor sprays off my list this year for things that I do not want.
What about the flavor gels?
Once again, they remain on the do not play list.
What about a babe from the Hawaiian Tropic Zone, which is his restaurant where they serve you in bikinis?
You can move that one over to my yes list.
Please find her under my tree.
I'm also going to ask this year that you not get me one of those little wine agers that you stick in the wine.
We talked about this. You see this out there. There are wine collars and wine agers, and what these do is they... maybe you've seen them. They're about $100, and you stick this little magnet-like thing in your wine, or that you put a collar, a very strong magnet collar around your neck. And what they say is, this ages wine. Now, no, it does not. Stop being ridiculous. Okay. And you put the wine, you put it in your wine, and you carry it like on your keychain, and you stick it in your wine. Hopefully, you rinse it off first. And it's supposed to, for every second it sits in the wine, it's supposed to age your wine a year. What it does is, for some reason, because we've tried these, and they change the tannic structure of wine. Now, when wine is young, they have tannins, which are the things that dry out your mouth and make you go... Now, one of the things that happens as wine ages is those tannins in young tannic wines, if it's a very good wine, will subside and become softer, and then you get to see all the complexity, and the wine develops all sorts of amazing things as it ages. When you stick your little magnet in the wine, the tannin gets softer. And nothing else happens.
And
so
nothing
you,
else.
So you can actually damage your wine and make it less interesting.
And frequently do.
No wine agers.
And again, I'm going to ask you guys to mail
I have a wine ager at home.
You do?
It's a cellar. Close the door, leave wines in there for five
years.
Five years later, they're five years old.
Last thing I want to touch on, and the Beef Council put out an ad, think of new things to do with beef, and they made a beautiful beef sundae with mashed potatoes. Please leave that off my list this year.
Have you seen that?
Awful.
It's a picture of beef made like an ice cream sundae with a
little parfait of beef and mashed potatoes.
Heavens to Betsy.
Let's
come back and talk about nicer things. Let's talk about barbecue with Adam Perry Lang. You're listening
to
the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left in Captain Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Adam Perry Lang. He's been on the foodie circuit for quite a long time with stints at Le Cirque, Danielle, and Chanterelle. He's now the proud owner of Daisy Mae's Barbecue USA, located on 11th Avenue in New York City. It was once just a takeout, but now it's a takeout that has some picnic tables that you can reserve. He's one of the few guys in New York, maybe the only guy in New York, doing whole hog barbecue. And Mark and I went with a bunch of friends, my foodie nephew, some family members, and we ordered ourselves a couple of months ago up a whole hog and sat down at Daisy Mae's and had one of the best barbecue meals. It's certainly the best barbecue meal I've ever had in New York.
Big fun. Adam, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for that intro.
thank you for that pig.
You're very welcome.
Now, let's characterize this. You were working at some pretty highfalutin places, Le Cirque, Danielle, Chanterelle. What made you decide to change over and do barbecue?
I really feel that I'm enamored with all types of cooking, and I never distinguished one cooking from the next with respect to whether you're using foie gras and truffles and you're using something else. What I did want to do and why I got into barbecue is because I wanted to identify with an American style of cuisine, and I also wanted to cook something with a price point where it had almost like a democratic cuisine where it wasn't too exclusive, and I could touch a lot of people with it.
So you mean unlike Le Cirque, Danielle, and Chanterelle?
Yeah, I mean, that is great, and I received probably the best training any person can ever get. But, you know, this type of thing, it's really just I get a cross-section of all types of people. So, you know, I'm really more outward. I'm able to talk to the guests and the customers, so is my staff, as opposed to when you're just working in a kitchen.
Now, you opened up as just a takeout counter. You were just a go counter when you first opened.
Exactly.
And then what made you decide that the tables in the back needed to happen?
Well, we had an opportunity to actually take the space next door to us, and we had such customer demand for it. So for us, it was a natural fit, and it was an opportunity to do the things that you enjoyed, which was the whole hog or the pork shoulder or the rack of lamb.
I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about whole hog barbecue in a moment, but let's take a moment here. And we've had a couple of shows on barbecue before. We've had a couple of barbecue chefs from across the country. But just in case people haven't heard before, what we do in New Jersey out here in our backyards on a Sunday afternoon, that's, we call that a barbecue, but that's not really barbecue, right? You want to tell us the difference between barbecue and a cookout?
Well, you know, officially we really can call it barbecue because we're from the north, and that's the word we assign to it. But in terms of what barbecue is, it's really more grilling when Yankees say it. That's really the deal. But true barbecue, as it stands, is a lower temperature, typically indirect, sometimes direct, but the meat would be far enough away from the heat source that it would be minimal and would not dry out or really char it too much.
So when you cook barbecue, so say we did this whole hog, which we're going to talk more about in a minute. How long did was that hog cooking?
About 8.5 hours.
Right. So we're talking like a low temperature here.
And again, this
was not
a giant pig. I mean, what did we have, about a 30-pound pig, 40-pound pig?
Yeah,
something
exactly.
Like that.
It was 30 to 40-pound pig, and You know, people talk about, open pit, whole hog type of style. They can do pigs that are typically in the 180 to 230 dressed weight, and that takes a lot longer, and it's a different method of cooking. This is really more urban approachable, so we do smaller pigs, and people get to enjoy it like that.
And you know what you need when you're in New York City? Urban approachable.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to.
It's required.
They don't let you dig a pit out there on 11th Street.
No, I don't think you'd want to.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to. Now,
right.
Now, when we talk about whole hog, what we're talking about is you take the entire animal and they barbecue the entire animal. Now, you need to order it a day before.
2 days before.
A day, sometimes
2 days
before.
And you have to, everybody, you have to pay for it, okay? And once you've paid for the hog, you can come with, how many people does a whole hog feed?
It's for 12 people.
So it's for 12 people, And you show up 2 days later at 8 o'clock, because that's when the hog comes out to the table.
That's right.
And you can have the whole animal. Now, listen, that's very important that to be served the whole animal like that. You get all the different cuts of meat. And, I mean, it's like got a face on it, you know, when it comes out. This is for real barbecue aficionados. And that's just nothing that you can get unless you've pre-ordered it and have it ready at a set time. You can't just walk in. It's the opposite of fast food.
You know, we purposely didn't tell you guys who we were when we were coming, just because we kind of wanted to do the experience as it would be done. And I one of the things I loved is we talked to him, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. Maybe it was Joe?
It was Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm sorry. And we talked to Jeff, and I said, so when should we be there? He said, well, the hog goes on the table at 8 o'clock. I said, okay, when should we be there? He said, well, the hog goes on the table at 8 o'clock.
Show up at 9, it'll be cold.
If you show up later, the hog will have been on the table for an hour. If you show up earlier, the hog will be out in an hour.
Right. It's the way it is. And you know what? It's the type of thing where you have to have that. If you lose a couple of customers, then so be it. But for the customers that really enjoy it and appreciate it, well, then it's all worth it. And you have to have that type of discipline with this type of scenario. I don't want to say are faking it, but in the sense they are, a lot of are pre-cooking a lot of things, and they're just sitting there resting, and you just kind of have a well-rested piece of meat. In barbecue, it's really typically not the case. So
Daisy May's Barbecue in New York City. You can find out how to get there and how to make reservations, how to get your own whole hog on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We're talking with Adam Perry Lang, the chef and owner of this great concept. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally, she's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn, and on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, and we're talking with Adam Perry Lang, who owns our favorite barbecue joint in New York City, Daisy May's.
Adam, you know, when Francis and I decided we absolutely had to come was after we read the Peter Meehan article in the 25 and under section. Sure. of the New York Times. Did you find that had a big effect on people coming in to do whole hog?
Oh, it always does. Anytime you get an article like that, people are very receptive, particularly from the New York Times. So.
Well, one of the things that we saw is it all of a sudden there was a buzz in the industry, in our industry.
Everybody in the industry went to your place.
You know, and whether you were at a wine tasting, somebody was talking about Daisy May's, or whether you were, you know, just in the restaurant talking to other people who own restaurants. By the way, I love the real New York flair we're getting in the background
effect.
There.
That's very nice.
Very well done.
Thank you for that.
But everybody in the industry was talking about, you know, Daisy May's and talking about this interesting thing you were doing in New York City that other people in New York City weren't really
doing. Did
you
find that surprising that the industry's embraced you so much?
No, I really didn't. I felt I did it because I felt there was a need for it, not just for myself. It really comes down to what I felt was the type of thing people want. It's food in its most honest form. And mm-hmm. having whole pig, there's really no corners to cut. It's pretty straightforward and And that's what we did, and that's why it's been received like it has.
Well, and I have to tell you, when you go to Daisy Mays, you're going to experience basically a takeout joint with some picnic tables in the room next door. If you order the whole hog or whole pieces of meat, you can reserve a table. Other than that, just go and get it on your own. While we were sitting there with our, we brought all sorts of, they don't have a license yet, so we brought a bunch of Chimay beer and a bunch of
wine. That was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. We shared some with Adam. but as we're sitting there, you know, it was a real nice neighborhood vibe. I mean, the cop on the beat stopped in and got a bag of takeout, sat at the table next to us, and we wound up talking to him, some families. It's a cool joint. You should definitely check it out if you want to be in the know in the food world. Some of the best barbecue, certainly in the Northeast, is at Adam Perry Lang's Daisy Mays in New York City. We're going to go to the news, and we're going to come back on the other side and talk about a bunch of different things about barbecue, how you get there, how you make it, and what you drink with it after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday to Friday from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today our guest is Adam Perry Lang. He owns Daisy Mays in Manhattan. You may think Manhattan and barbecue sound incongruous, but thanks in part to Adam Perry Lang, it's not. Daisy Mays Barbecue is on 11th Avenue in New York City. They where you can go and if you pre-order it, go for a whole hog, and you want to do your little corporate building thing, a little bunch thing with your friends to get together, you go and pick apart a dead animal and eat it. Delicious.
Eat a pig together.
Now, I'm serious. Mark and I, we went
absolutely.
With some friends and family. I brought my 13-year-old nephew, the foodie. We had a great time. Of course, he didn't go to school the next day. We stayed kind of late. Now, you not in addition to the restaurant, you have barbecue push carts. That's
right.
Kind of interesting for a guy who once worked at Le Cirque to be heading up a push cart fleet. What's that all about?
I think it's, you know, once I did it, people said, "Oh, of course, it's been right in front of us the whole time," and that's really how I looked at it. It was just really for me a means to not only market what I had to offer on the streets and prime areas, but just to really bring in new customers and let them know that we deliver all over Manhattan.
So where are your push carts located now?
I have two out there right now at our prime locations, which is 50th between 6th and 7th and one off of 40 Wall Street.
That's great. So can we talk just a second about kind of the underground world of the push cart, of the above ground push cart? What kind of dynamic is there on the street as far as being out there with other people selling, you know, hot dogs and pretzels
kebabs, what
are the rules you need to follow?
I think the first thing is it comes down to respect, because, you know, I'm not going on the street and I'm not competing selling the exact same products as them, and the initial feeling from the vendors is they might feel threatened, but, you know, I refuse to sell canned soda, and I refuse to sell anything that would be in direct competition with them.
So what do you sell for drinks?
Sweet tea in mason jars.
Nice.
No roasted nuts, though, huh?
No, I won't do it.
No kebabs?
Well, and then people bring the mason jars back to you, or they toss them?
No, I don't really have the facility, so a lot of people have a lot of pencil and pen jars around.
All right, now you're a Yankee cook in New York who worked at a bunch of fancy French restaurants. How did you first learn about barbecue? How did you learn to cook this stuff?
Well, my first true experience happened in around 99. I was working as a private chef, and one of my areas where I cooked was in New Mexico. And it was a working ranch with, displaced Texans. And on our downtime, we would cook barbecue. And it was there that I really started to see, hey, you know, this is not grilling as we know it. It's real barbecue.
So did the guys on the ranch, they knew from how they cook in their personal lives, how to cook, do barbecue, and you learned from them?
Not only that, they actually were proficient welders. So we would actually build the barbecues out of propane tanks and 55-gallon drums. And
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great.
In order to be a great barbecue chef, you also have to be a proficient welder, don't you? Isn't that one of the criteria?
Well, at least it makes and again, it's true, but yes, you got to take it seriously because the fact of the matter is this whole thing about barbecue and Americana is it really embraces Americana because it's all about ingenuity and really taking on the hands-on experience and exploring it as opposed to just going out and buying a Weber grill that's gas propane and you just turn it on, you're ready to go. So there's a lot of reward that is had with the whole process.
You know, I remember I was at the Big Apple Barbecue Festival the first year they had it, and they had a couple of guys up there who they had all brought their own equipment. Some of them were mounted on trucks. And one guy was roasting whole hog, and he had a fleet. He had about 12, maybe 10. They were underground oil tanks.
They're like coffins. I think it was Mitchell's.
Yeah, it was Mitchell's. And it was great. And they were on wheels. And he had those suckers cooking all night long, and it was amazing. You opened it up, and you saw he had the hogs split down the middle. They were the big ones. Holy come on.
I was so impressed that so many people were able to kind of take their show on the road. And you know, you talked about it earlier in the show. You talked about how, there are people kind of doing faux barbecue where when it's ready is when barbecue's ready is when you eat it. And you don't eat it later, and you don't eat it earlier. You eat it when it's ready. And how many of the people at the Big Apple Barbecue were actually roasting their whole hog so it would be ready for the Big Apple Barbecue?
That's a whole big thing, that whole barbecue circuit, the contest. Now, what's your impression of that, and how were you received coming as a New Yorker? Do you participate in these barbecue contests around the country?
Oh, absolutely. My first contest that I competed in, I won in the World Pork Expo out in Des Moines, Iowa. And that was a fantastic experience. And my whole life on the trail, which just started only about 2 years ago, has proved to probably the most rewarding in terms of learning barbecue, because it's not from restaurants that you might learn barbecue, but it's really from typical people who are obsessed that you learn it from. And that's where you get it.
Well, it really sounds like my kind of place, the World Pork Expo.
Yeah, so. It's unbelievable.
Well, the congressmen go there, too, I think. No, I was just talking with a couple of fans last night who went down to West Virginia for the Rutgers game where Rutgers lost. And they said that anybody wearing red was not treated hospitably down there in West Virginia.
I don't believe it.
How do they feel about the New York barbecue guy coming in and winning the show?
Well, you know, I think it's like any place. If you're from a different part, if you just kind of come in like a bull and try to say, here I am, and, take me or leave me, as opposed to going there and saying, hey, you know, it's really nice to be here, and, what can I learn about your culture? You know, they are probably the most hospitable people I've ever met in my life. So, and, you know, they took me in quite instantly because I was genuinely interested in what they're about, and it's never been an issue.
That's great. Well, food is a great uniter. I mean, nobody has to tackle anybody in the food world, I guess.
I think there's also people want to teach people the skills they have if someone's open to learning them.
It's a common thread, and they want to learn from you as well. And, you know, if you come in like anything, like I'm the best, and, you can't teach me anything, you'll be alone.
And you won't learn anything.
That's right.
Now, when you barbecue, I mean, now we talk about the whole hog, but you barbecue a whole rate. What do we need? What kind of meats do we barbecue? I mean, I can find people who barbecue just about anything. What do we focus on as far as what types of meat and what quality of meat to barbecue?
Well, you bring up a good point. But, you know, there's quality, of course, and you always try to get the best quality possible. But barbecue items, because you're typically cooking things above 160 internal degrees, you're relying on two things, and that's collagen that breaks down to gelatin and fat. And these two things keep the meat moist and delicious. So that's the key thing. So you need something that is high in fat and high in collagen to have a really favorable barbecue.
So it's basically the opposite of what you would grill quickly, you barbecue.
Exactly.
I remember we had an experience once with a guy we were working with who grilled some birds that were really tough, that were supposed, like, you would normally braise, and he put them on the grill and cooked them really fast. I was chewing that for about a week and a half, you know.
It's terrible.
But it's the collagen that makes a piece of meat that you cook quickly tough. It's that very thing that then breaks down into gelatin and makes, say, a short rib tender. Is that correct?
Exactly.
I have to say, it's one of the great inventions of, and it's not just American cuisine, because there's barbecue, there's Korean barbecue, there's all sorts of barbecue, but our American barbecue is really a great treasure, and it's great to see it come to New York, because you're not the only guy in New York barbecuing. I mean, you weren't able to find good barbecue in New York for a long time, but now you are, isn't that correct?
I always had a lot of respect, despite what some people say, but a lot of people really do. I always had a lot of respect for both Virgil's and Pearson's.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not like I came in and I felt like, nobody's done this before. Obviously, I put my edge on it, but at the same time, I've always felt we've had it. I just felt that New Yorkers could use more of it and the greater diversity.
I think you also made it very accessible by having a kind of a walk-up counter that you could come up to and get barbecue for an affordable price in New York to get a $7 or $8 sandwich in New York of supreme quality barbecue was something that pretty much wasn't available before.
Hey, we'll be back in just a moment talking with the restaurant guy. We're talking with the restaurant guys, Central Jersey, 1450 the time. Is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson, the number 9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We're talking with fellow restaurateur Adam Perry Lang, who has Daisy Mae's Barbecue in Manhattan.
So, Adam, you kind of come from, and we alluded to this earlier, a different place. I mean, spent some time working at Le Cirque. You spent some time working at Danielle. You spent some time working at Chanterelle. Now you open Daisy Mae's Barbecue in New York City, which of course, is an amazing place. But before that, you spent a good amount of time doing something kind of unusual, I think, for great chefs, which is you spent some time as a private chef.
That's right.
And from that experience, you've actually opened up a company that kind of connects private chefs with private chef gigs.
That's right.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, again, it's my experience is going into as a private chef was, I was ready to do my own restaurant venture, and at the same time, it takes time to develop it, and you need a good clip of time to develop that. And what I found, which was wonderful, was the opportunity as being a private chef to turn around and take that time and not really have the typical pressures of working in a restaurant kitchen or environment. I found a lot of my contemporaries feeling the same way as I was in it, and I really enjoyed myself. And people on the other end who wanted private chefs, so it was just a very natural fit. It was just, it was there. I had chefs that wanted private chef jobs, and I had a lot of people looking for high quality, highly trained individuals. So it was a natural fit.
Yeah, we actually had one of our chefs in the restaurant he was only the chef at one of our restaurants for a brief time, but spent a lot of time as a private chef. But truthfully, he was kind of a loner. He didn't like working in a big kitchen with a big staff, and he kind of preferred the private chef thing, but he was a fairly talented guy.
It's the break some of us, most of us, need sometimes in this business, because you can really suffer from burnout, it's a great break.
Now, you talk about the many different experiences as a private chef. You also worked at Guy Savoy, one of the best restaurants in France. You worked at Danielle, of course. You worked at Chanterelle. you worked at Le Cirque. Now, those are all super high-end restaurants on two continents. So you have a lot of pedigree and a lot of experience with, you know, four-star and Michelin three-star restaurants. Is there anything that you bring to barbecue that you learned in those environments that maybe somebody who was in barbecue who didn't also have those experience might not have, do you think?
Well, you know, despite the fact that we work with, in those environments, we work with very high-end, high-quality things, the real thing that you find in those is people that are very serious and professional about what they do. So what it really was is, you know, and typically after work, we wouldn't be going to high-end restaurants to eat together, but we would go to small, less formal, casual places that had great food, and it could just be steak-free.
Most of us don't want foie gras at the end of a
at the end of a 12-hour shift, 15-hour shift. So, or we go down to Chinatown, and, you know, there's one place that you might want to go to. So I really feel that I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, there are other people in barbecue that take it just as seriously. It's just that you don't necessarily have to work with these high-quality ingredients to say that, hey, you know, you're a serious chef.
Let's not call them high-quality ingredients. Let's call them expensive ingredients.
Exactly, exactly. Expensive. Yeah, that's a good point, exactly. Because you can have something of high quality. It can be relatively inexpensive.
Well, Francis and I talk a lot about the fact that some of those secondary and tertiary cuts that you know, pork butt or those types of things, sometimes are the absolute most flavorful part of the animal.
As long as
the industry is actually catching up, because now they're not very cheap anymore.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny. Mark and I were talking about that just the other day, because one of our restaurants is sort of an Italian-American restaurant on the high end. And we used to make ossobuco occasionally. We love ossobuco. And it used to be, you know, ossobuco used to cost $1.
Ossobuco,
you know,
was $1.50 a pound when we first opened our first
restaurant.
And now
it's crazy.
And now it's $10 a pound for wholesale, uncooked, with bone.
And are you seeing on the cuts of meat that you use as well? Are you seeing inflation as the current restaurants catch on?
I definitely think so, and I think that people are really more attracted to what really tastes good as opposed to what buzzwords like tenderloin or rack. And people are really becoming more and more comfortable with what really tastes good to them. And what they've found is that typically collagen-rich or hearty, and it really ties into the whole comfort food thing, are really more satisfying than something that is quickly grilled and typically doesn't have as much flavor.
Adam, I'm going to tell you that probably the best item on Stage Left's menu right now is a halibut dish that we do with pork belly. Now, you know, you think pork belly is one of the least expensive parts of the pig, but it is one of the most flavorful, delicious parts of the pig.
Yeah, it gives it real, what they say in France, a goût, you know, real richness, a real depth to the dish. I totally can see it.
Well, I want to recommend that people check out, if you live in the listening area, if you're going to be passing through New York, you should check out Daisy Mays. And if you've got the time and you've got the friends, call them in advance and you can reserve a table and you can order a whole hog or a half a hog. And we'll give you information on how to do that on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll link you up as well to Daisy Mays. Adam Perry Lang, thanks for taking the time to spend with us today.
Thanks. It was a pleasure, guys. I'm coming again soon.
You can count on that.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're,
great.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks
for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We're kind of whole hog kind of guys.
We pretty much do everything we do. We do whole hog.
No doubt about it. That's my definition of a party right there. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Party Restaurants. We were talking with Adam Perry Lang, the owner of Daisy Mays, about barbecue, and I have a vision in my head.
You have a vision? Well, you look like you're about to lay hands. What's the matter with you?
It's a vision of you.
I'm scared again.
It's a vision of you in front of the Sigma Pi fraternity house circa 1986 in a purple...
85.
In a purple Sigma Pi sweatshirt with a ripped letter. The pie was a little ripped off. And you
true,
were guarding,
true, true.
And you were guarding a roasting pig beer.
Guarding the pig.
Beer in hand.
As
it got closer, some of the fraternity brothers would attempt to get up there and snip a little bit of ear off.
My very first trips into the New York City meat packing district were to pick up pigs for the Sigma Pi pig roast that
you
we would
fraternity
do,
boys
that we would do twice
remember
a year.
Remember, you went into the bar and you sat the pig down and bought him a beer at the barstool.
I swear that it is true. That's not funny. I swear that it is true that we would have to stand guard on the pig until it was ready to go.
You put the fraternity t-shirt on the pig, put a hat on him.
You know,
the heady days.
Are you done?
You know, because I was the guy. I was the pencil neck
geek. I was the guy that guarding the pig from you.
No, because I wasn't one of the fraternity brothers. I was the pencil neck geek guy who showed up at the last minute and was like, I'm a friend of Mark. Can I have some pig? And thank you, by the way, for always making sure that I got a little bit of pig.
Invariably, that pig was supposed to be done at 8 o'clock. It would take longer to cook
midnight,
than we anticipate.
One in the morning.
One in the morning, a bunch of fraternity guys would go, you know, finally. Actually, guy by the name of Casey Fowler was the pig master, and he would say, decree when the pig was ready, and everybody would go
and he
get
was pretty
the pig.
Good. And I do remember that I was the pencil net geek, like, what's that guy doing here? And people were like, oh, he's a friend of Mark. I don't know. we let him come in.
Mark, he takes in all these stray puppies from wherever.
You looked a little, you're the same at the Trinity Bar. Anyway, I'm not kidding. Mark and I went and had a blast at Daisy Mays.
And again, we really did bring 750 milliliter bottles of Chimay Red Premier. What a spectacular combination.
Belgian beer and pig. Amazing. We also brought a bunch of really good wines, like a whole different spectrum of really good wines. None of them.
Everybody drank the beer.
None of them.
Everybody.
I mean, I really wanted to drink good wine. I brought Barolo. I brought American wines.
Yeah, you were crazy. I brought the Chimay.
The Chimay was great. I drank the Chimay. Brought the wine home. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.